So this is part of an ongoing dialogue, you know, or actually, I guess, polylogue. Krishna's talking, Bhima's talking, Yudhisthira's talking, everybody's talking here, and deciding what's going to happen with Ashvatthama. So in the purport, we actually saw three different topics. The first part was the science of weapons. And actually, the very first part we got up here. This first paragraph is actually part of the decision about whether Ashvatthama should be killed or what should happen to him. So, but basically, the first part is this whole section about the science of weapons. Prabhupada says, Dhanurveda, or military science, was taught by Dronacharya, with all its confidential secrets of throwing and controlling Vedic weapons. Prabhupada says then, gross military science is dependent on material weapons, but finer than that is the art of throwing the arrows saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras, or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana, that Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Sri Ram, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrow by only hearing the sound, without seeing the object. So this is a finer military science than that of the gross material military weapons used nowadays. Okay. And the second topic is respect for the teacher. And the beginning, Prabhupada says, he starts off by making this statement that Dronacharya was teaching all these things, and then he continues then, Arjuna was taught all this, and therefore Draupadi wished that Arjuna feel obliged to Acharya Drona for all these benefits. And in the absence of Dronacharya, his son was his representative. That was the opinion of the good lady Draupadi. And last topic is the occupations of a brahmana. It may be argued why Dronacharya, a rigid brahmana, should be a teacher in military science. But the reply is that a brahmana should become a teacher regardless of what his department of knowledge is. A learned brahmana should become a teacher, a priest, and a recipient of charity. A bona fide brahmana is authorized to accept such professions. So actually it divides it into two parallel categories. A brahmana should be a student or a teacher. He should inspire people to worship the deity, and he should worship the deity. And he should give charity and receive charity, like that. Okay. So the respect for the teacher was discussed in the previous purports. And here, of course, we see the wonderful court of law. You know, Draupadi's pleading for Ashvatthama. He's tied up here. And then Krishna's manifesting four arms to keep Draupadi on one side, Bhima and Yudhisthira on the other, ready to chop his head off. And I guess, I don't know where Arjuna is here, somewhere. But we've been discussing this, I guess, for several days now. And we wanted to come online and listen to the classes the last few days, but we just haven't been able to get this internet connection. We got it yesterday in the afternoon. So, but the topics I've been seeing here, Arjuna, under what qualifications can Arjuna make this decision about what should happen to Ashvatthama? And Krishna was telling him, as soon as he tossed Ashvatthama in the chariot like a bundle of straw, you know, and humiliated him and tied up, couldn't even move, I guess. And then Krishna said, you should cut his head off. He's the burnt remnant of his family. He's attacked your family. And the purport, Baba says, Lord Sri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly to kill Ashvatthama just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It is not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of his duty, nor was Lord Sri Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord Sri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. So he made this note that in the Bhagavatam we can also see this in Dhruva, that Narada Muni tells him, oh, you're a little boy, you should go back, like that, you know. And so maybe even from the very beginning, Narada Muni was thinking, this boy might make it. He's, you know, enthusiastic guy. So, but sometimes the spiritual master actually tells us something just to test our one thing, you know, is of course the sense of duty. Do we actually have a proper sense of what is right and wrong? So spiritual master or Krishna may actually tell us something which is incorrect, or to see if we actually come up with the right answer. That was more like the conversation between Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami in reference to Ajamiyo, because in the fifth canto, Sukadeva Goswami explains how everybody's going to go to hell for their sinful reaction. He describes all the hells. So in the sixth canto, Maharaj Parikshit says, is there any way for people to avoid this? And then Sukadeva Goswami tests his sense of what is right and wrong, what is dharma, by saying, yeah, they should engage in, you know, pious activities, you know, to counteract their sinful activities. Then Maharaj Parikshit politely said, this is not going to work. People do this all the time, but it doesn't get rid of the root problem. So then Sukadeva Goswami says, well, you're right. They should actually cultivate wisdom, jnana. Karma won't work. Let's try jnana. And then Sukadeva Goswami also, Maharaj Parikshit also rejects that. And then the Sukadeva Goswami says, yes, and is testing you here, you know, what is, to see if you have the proper sense of what is duty. You know? And then he tells him, yeah, the only way to get rid of these reactions is devotional service. The essence of devotional service is the holy names. And he gives the example then of Ajamil and how he was able to get free from these things. So sometimes the spiritual master, Krishna, they test us to see if we actually have any kind of duty like that, you know. And other times it says to magnify the sense of duty, you know. And maybe there are two possibilities. Then one is to magnify it so others can see. So the spiritual master may, you know, put some pressure on a student. You know, who he knows will react in a proper and an exemplary fashion, so the other students, you know, can get lessons from that. Prabhupada says a Bengali phrase is that the mother-in-law teaches her daughter-in-law by teaching her daughter, because, you know, a newly married wife in somebody else's home, if her mother-in-law starts telling her do this, do that, she may feel a little bit, you know, uptight about this. So the mother appreciates this, so she tells her daughter, now, Susie, you know your brother likes this kind of cooking, so you be sure and buy these vegetables today, you know. So the new daughter-in-law hears this, and, you know, she gets the right vegetables for her new husband then, you know. So one thing is that point about magnifying for others. The other thing is just because it's there, but it's just not, it could be stronger, our sense of duty. So I understand sometimes Prabhupada would engage in these, you know, very, you know, robust arguments with Tamal Krishnamars about this and that. And he would encourage Tamal Krishnamars to fight back in this and that. And so then it became clear, you know, the ideas became strong, clear, forward. And so then when Maharaj encountered these arguments and challenges to what is duty, what is right and wrong, he already had gone through this very clearly, you know, with Prabhupada in a very strong sense. So the question is, can Arjuna actually make these decisions about what should happen, you know, to Ashwatthama? That's the first question. And next thing, can Draupadi make the judgment? This text won't never, this previous one was 1.7-40. Now 1.7.42, the question is actually, can Draupadi make the judgment? You know? And probably has a real great, I don't know how this was dealt with in the class, this is a wonderful one. Women, as a class, are no better than boys, and therefore they have no discriminatory power like that of a man. Okay, we published this in our newsletters here. Okay. So that can you know, ladies make these decisions? You know, should women be in administrative positions where they have to make these decisions? For example, like as a temple president, sometimes you have to ban somebody from the temple. You have to get very strong with people and stuff like that. And of course, sometimes there's even physical violence, you know, to deal with people in the temple situation. We, especially in Berkeley. Berkeley is, of course, a real circus. It used to be. And my goodness, the Sunday feast, the strangest people would come. I mean, methadone freaks and everything else. And I was a doorkeeper sometimes, and that was a, boy, I such a job, you know. And then Shimon Pandit, I learned different things from him, how to do the job and everything else in terms of diplomacy and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know. But sometimes it was, there was like, you know, physical violence. People would become violent about this and that, or, you know. And so, you know, can and you have to make these decisions, very, very discriminatory decisions like that sometimes. So the question arises, is that a good position for a lady in general, Prabhupada says, as a class, you know. And this brings us to our second point here. We were thinking about this, and that is ISKCON now attracts brahminically inclined men and women. And Prabhupada says in the beginning we're looking for first-class people and giving them first-class habits. So a first-class person, man or woman, male or female body, is somebody who has developed a sense of commitment to honesty. You know, honesty in terms of others and honesty with themselves. Not like, you know, lying to themselves like I do. Yeah, it's okay, it's all right. Yeah? And if they have that, even if by their karma they may be in some kind of different situation, male, female, Shudra, Malacha, whatever, then they can be trained. You know, Prabhupada said they can develop first-class habits and so on like that. Yeah? So I would say this is one thing that the many of the devotees in ISKCON who have this female situation, they're not in this category of women as a class. They're in this category of brahminical, you know, brahminically inclined people. So therefore, the discriminatory abilities and so on are better than general. But I was just watching this, you know, Acharya series or something. And Prabhupada is strong about this. It's like, you know, he makes this point quite strongly. He was talking about how the general tendency of a lady is to dress and act to attract a man, you know, for shelter or to control him, you know, or because of a situation, because she wants to do some service. And so she acts in such a fashion that some, her father or a father figure or her husband or a brother or a son, grown-up son, you know, they'll all be motivated to engage her in some service, which she can do, you know, or that they'll come under her control and then she can get what she wants them to do, or that she'll get some shelter and protection like that. So Prabhupada is saying this is natural condition, and we see this, and therefore in Draupadi, the situation would be that without being properly sheltered, you know, she would be in an awkward position to make proper decisions like that. So Prabhupada is saying that actually her decision not to let Ashvatthama go or these kind of things and forgive him was because she was falling into her natural position of being a gentle and good lady like that, and being forgiving and tolerant and motherly. But in this condition, she should have been under you know, superior guidance like that, and she would have appreciated that, well, yes, you know, this is not proper in this situation. Going on here, in 1972, where my laser go there, 1927, these are these really super instructions by Bhishma Dev. It says that, you know, this is the disappearance of Bhishma Dev. And it says he instructed all this Varnashram Dharma to Maharaj Yudhisthira during, 1 second here, okay. Yeah, put my chat up here, okay. Okay, if you can't hear me, just send me a chat thing, I'll check every now and again. We've had this experience, of course. I gave a 45-minute class one time and nobody heard it.
No, same room. We can hear you loud and clear, Maharaj.
Okay. Same room. Yeah, actually, when they installed the Comcast thing this time, I told him it was terrible sometimes in the past, and the guy said that was a year ago. Now we've gone digital, and it is much better. Yeah. Thank you, God. So in 1727, this is just fantastic study and meditation for what is our idea about Varnashram. And it should be printed up as a separate little book with a little few words of introduction, along with probably this manifesto, 17, the 1738, where the four principles are mentioned, and probably gives basically a Hare Krishna manifesto, like the Communist Manifesto. And he says, if the Hare Krishnas ruled the world, here's what we would do, you know. So it makes it very nice, very clear, simple thing, and many people would actually think this is quite nice, you know. So in there it discusses kings, everything else, and it discusses ladies. And Prabhupada says, as far as the women class, now again this is class, you know, are concerned, they are accepted as a power of inspiration for men. And as such, women are more powerful than men. So this is the other side of it, is that Prabhupada is saying up here that the discriminatory powers are weaker. But he's saying their inspirational powers are stronger. So the idea is to understand what kind of situation we're in. Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra Brahmachari Krihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas, and then male or female, and then apply these things, you know, Pula Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasa, and actually apply our tools like that. What I have is a screwdriver, it's not a chisel, okay, and therefore I got to use it like this or like that. And then we can be very, very successful in serving Krishna. Yeah. So in this case, go on here, I think. Yeah. So, and then in 1743, going on with this decision of whether or not, the first part, whether or not we should give the respect to Ashvatthama as a son of a Brahmana. Yeah. My point is the texts and purports are full of subtle nuances. The relationship between men and women, all these things. Already in the first canto, we're getting the very subtle stories with subtle different things that really are quite adequate to deal with the complex problems of life. Prabhupada says, according to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is called an acharya, or person who has personally assimilated all the essence of Shastras and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. This is very intense, you know. So this is a question about in ISKCON. But in some ways Prabhupada makes it so general as to call Brahmanas. This is Brahmana, the spiritual master, for the other castes and orders like that. So we can take it, and we should take it in different sense like that, you know. In some ways the only guru in ISKCON is Lord Balaram. Even Krishna, because sometimes even Lord Balaram becomes confused, yeah, by Krishna's potency. But Balaram Nityananda is the Adi Guru, but it doesn't mean everybody's on that level. When we come to great acharyas like Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, Ramanuja Acharya, and they've assimilated this to a very great degree. But any Brahmana. And Prabhupada is giving Brahman initiation, so if we respect him, we should respect his decision. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakangshati samasarvesha-bhuteshu madbhaktim labhyate param. So such a person, he's not disturbed by ups and downs in life. He doesn't lament or hanker. And my experience has been that devotees who are, you know, properly second initiated, who are guna karma, engaged in brahmanical activity, they are pretty even with all these profits and losses in their service in ISKCON, the problems like that. Of course, they're brahmanas, they're not goswamis, and so their comprehension of the absolute truth is general, you know. When they make more advancement, they become goswamis, and then they come to the paramatma level. Then they can actually see Krishna with his features, his indications, his likes and dislikes. then they see the deity as a person with qualities and how the deity may be feeling differently on different days and stuff like that and so on, and communicates some intelligence, you know? Now it can become more assimilated to the absolute truth more. Vedanti tat tat vavidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmati paramatmati bhagavan iti sabdate. So those who actually know the absolute truth, they say it's realized in those three phases. So guru, any brahmana is a guru. And when it speaks of a Goswami and finally of a pure devotee who's established himself in his rasa, his relationship with Krishna, like that. You know? So here's another question of who's qualified to make these different decisions. You know, who's qualified to be an acharya? You know? Dronacharya was being accepted as this. He was a guru, and also he was a martial arts guru. Which didn't mean he was actually teaching the Bhagavad Dharma, you know, correctly. Maybe some doubt about that, even if he was actually really purely situated in Bhagavad Dharma. But at least in terms of many aspects of Varna Ashram Dharma and other things, he was very much, you know, the acharya. Complicated situation. Yeah. So yeah, but Ashvatthama was his son, but then had he actually assimilated these things, and was he engaging people properly? And finally, again about Draupadi, describing her, a devotee like Draupadi can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. And this is what's amazing, because Ashvatthama had, you know, cut the heads off of her kids like that, you know. And so when she came back, she wanted him forgiven, like that, he's son of a brahmana. You know, what kind of people are these? In our next lifetime, are we going to be able to take part in Krishna's lila directly and get more training? You know, will we become Draupadis? You know, ladies will become the Draupadis, and men will become, you know, Vidagda will become Bhishma. Ramananda will become, I don't know, something, Bhima. Everybody, pick your next lifetime. We're all going to be there in the battle of Kurukshetra. We'll recognize everybody. Oh, hey, you were so and so. Yeah. But oh my goodness, such intense, you know, intense challenges. You think we have problems now? I get stomach aches, you know, from the problems in ISKCON. Yeah. They give me sometimes, oh my goodness, you know, in the future it's going to be even worse. It's a very complex question. You know, should he be forgiven or not? And up to this point, there's no solution yet. The apple. But you know, Krishna is going to drop an apple on Arjuna's head. I can give you a hint here. Krishna is going to drop the apple on Arjuna's head, and Arjuna will figure out, you know, what to do in terms of the situation. So that's the first part, is that was making this very, very fine discrimination of whether or not Ashvatthama should be liberated or not. Yeah. I guess the time is here. Go ahead here. Okay. So the second thing was the science of weapons. And I don't know. I love these things in theory. In war, in fact, I don't think, you know, nobody likes war, in fact. He thinks almost nobody. Even General Patton, I think, had his limits, you know. Dwight D. Eisenhower hated war. He hated war, you know, and tried to avoid it. He was fortunately the Allied commander during World War II. But others like Patton, as the history goes, they actually were just looking for a good fight, for valor and heroism, like that. You know? This, of course, in the left here is Jet Li. In the movie Forbidden Kingdom, which has its own interesting history. And from China also, there's this description of these very superior weapons in the past and so on. Prabhupada talks about how these things were being done by much more superior to modern machine guns and bombs, you know. And they were, you had magical staffs and stuff like this. So for us, this is a whole, you know, topic. You have passion, so we got some of our points here we make on them. Please tolerate our passionate activity. Yeah, we always, of course, we got named after Hanuman. So here's a very nice picture we got of what the Vanaras actually looked like. They weren't cute monkeys. The Vanaras were tough guys with big fangs, sharp nails, and brutal intelligence. And they weren't all that bright, you know, like that. Yeah, but they, Prabhupada says at one time, I guess, Hanuman was talking to the other Vanaras, what are we doing, this and that. And he said, I don't know all the details of all this, you know, who kidnapped who and all this. All I know is that Ram and Lakshman want this fight, and that's good enough for me. Is it good enough for you? Yeah. So, I'm tossing a few weapons. Here's a nice picture. If you look at the background of these things, you see they were using all kinds of fantastic weapons. Here we got a guy with, you know, 20, 30 arrows going at the same time here. Yeah. Yeah. So question, did these exist? Is this possible? Yeah. If you look at Chinese perspective, yeah. Oriental perspective. And they bring it down into the martial arts and kung fu and these kind of things, which we studied, into very practical stuff, which is incomprehensible to North American technology in general, which is basically Northern German. And also in Peru, the boy is probably here from Peru, Prabhupada says that the Peruvians had Kumbhaka yoga, frog yoga, which means that you can stay under, buried in the ground. The frogs can stay buried in the ground for 2 years without air, and still when it rains and the water softens up, they come out. Not all of them make it, but you know, it's incredible. You know, different kinds of knowledge. So here's a very nice fight between Hanuman and the demons. So, Prabhupada says in the purport, the control is by Vedic mantras or the transcendental science of sound. So Bhagavatam 3.11.14, where it's talking about, you know, how the world's created, Prabhupada says, the subject matters of physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, time and space, dealt with in the above verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, are certainly very interesting to students of the particular subject. Ah, okay, so that includes us. But as far as we are concerned, we cannot explain them very thoroughly in terms of technical knowledge. The subject is summarized by the statement that above all the different branches of knowledge is the supreme control of Kala, the plenary representation of the supreme personality of Godhead. Nothing exists without him, and therefore everything, however wonderful it may appear to our meager knowledge, is but the work of the magical wand of the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord Ki Jai. Jai Gopal. It's a beautiful picture, no? We have butterflies, flowers, birds, peacocks, Krishna's flute. The Prabhupada continues in that purport. As far as time is concerned, we beg to subjoin herewith a table of timings in terms of the modern clock. So starting from the bottom, the Bhagavatam is saying that one paksha equals 15 days, basically like a fortnight. One night, 12 hours. One day, 12 hours. One prahar, 3 hours. Which I guess is 4 muhurtas, like Brahma Muhurta, 4 muhurtas, 45 minutes, 48 minutes each. Then one danda, 30 minutes, which I actually think is 24, but there are different ways of dividing them. And so that, for example, Gaur Artik, Prabhupada said, should be 30 minutes after the sun goes down, but actually one danda is when you Gaur Artik. And in between is the sandhya. Sun's gone down, so you chant your Gayatri, do prayers, japa, and protect yourself, because it's a very dangerous time. And then after 30 minutes after that, 24 minutes, then we have the arti, I guess make the bhoga offering. Lagu, 2 minutes, kashta, 8 seconds, kshana, 1/5 of a second. How's it go? Shivadika madabayora para madurya lila guna rupanamna pratikshana. It's not pratikshana, but it's pratikshana. Yeah, he's aspiring after appreciating the pastimes of Radha and Krishna every pratikshana. The nimesha is 8/15 of a second. This is considered to be the blink of an eye. And Naimish Aranya means Nimesh Aranya, the forest where Vishnu's glance doesn't deviate more than one Nimesh, one blank. And a lava of 8, and finally one Truti, which is 8/13,500 of a second. Now this stimulates our fantastic imagination, which is hopefully we can dovetail this in the service of science. Of the devotees. Because now let us look at one truti versus 1 second. Because in the West, this is the modern people, this is our smallest unit of time. We have an hour, well, we have a year, a month, a day, an hour, a minute, and a second. And that's the smallest we do. After that, it's actually fractions of a second, a millisecond, microsecond, nanosecond, you know, picosecond, you know, like that. And so maybe we can assume that this is basically the level upon which our senses and our life works. Because someone like a drummer, playing a trap set in a rock and roll band, he can break it down very clearly and distinctly into fractions of a second. Maybe he can get in like 3. Maybe 3, 5. Maybe you can get him 5 different drum beats, you know, different drums or something within 1 second, like that. And a magician, the hand is quicker than the eye. He can do stuff that's also down to a fraction of a second, like that. And he can feel the distinctions. He can feel the distinctions. But basically, about 1 second, it seems that maybe this is the limit, you know. So we're talking about all this subtle control of astras and mantras, and you know, this is all fairy tales. You know, well, is it really? You know, yeah, there are scientists here. Because if we look at this, if you look at the truti, it's 8/13,500 of a second. So I think you turn it upside down and you get the actual duration divided, which is 1,687.5 of those can occur within 1 second. Within 1 second. Or if you have any cycles per second, that means that, you know, if you have a pitch vibrating, you know, boop, boop, that actually is a series of cycles, right? And so that basically means that one truti is 1,687.5 cycles per second. That's how fast it is. Now, if we look at a piano keyboard here, we got on the piano keyboard, we got middle C, okay, then we got tenor C, then we have soprano C. So you see here girls are superior to boys because we have a tenor C here and a soprano C here. And then, this is where the truti occurs. It's in between, A flat, or B flat? Somewhere like B flat and B or something like that, you know, A, B, C. So you can imagine tapping on the piano, what a high-pitched note you get, like that and so on. Yeah? But the question is then, because Prabhupada says, I think I got an order here, meter and accent. This is 1.4.13. The difference between the Vedas and the Puranas is that between the Brahmanas and the Paryabrajakacharyas. The Brahmanas were meant to administer some fruitive sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas, but the Paryabrajakacharyas, or learned preachers, are meant to disseminate transcendental knowledge to one and all. As such, the Paryabrajakacharyas are not always expert in pronouncing the Vedic mantras, excuse me, which are practiced systematically by accent and meter by the brahmanas who are meant for administering Vedic rites. So here's the point, that the thing has to be chanted, the different mantras in the Vedas, the hymns for invoking Agni Astra, the hymns for invoking the water to flood, water to fall from the clouds, all these magical things produced by mantra, produced by sound, which Arjuna learned from Dronacharya, they're involved, Prabhupada says, by meter and accent, like that. Here, of course, is an example. Daily, daily, sing to Mary, sing my soul her praises due, all her feasts, her actions honor, with the heart's devotion true. Call her mother, call her virgin, happy mother, virgin blessed. Nice. So, does that make you feel devotion? Like that. It's nice prayer. You know. These are hymns when using meter and accent, which actually does touch the heart. It actually has the same effect. But the idea is, of course, that now we're dealing with the gross world. And this is some history of this. Now we're tying it up to modern science. If you look on the internet, you can find this. Sand forms intricate geometric patterns on a resonating material plate in this demonstration of the Claudine plate experiment by Bruce Poop. To run the experiment, Bruce Poop placed a metal plate on top of a speaker that was attached to a tone generator. At certain frequencies, the metal plate resonates, causing the sand to collect along nodal lines where the metal is not vibrating. Science. Okay. So here our picture comes on. I hope it comes there. And this is before anybody had speakers or had tone generators. And you can see this fellow here, probably making a demonstration to his fellow scientists, had put sand, I guess colored sand, on a metal plate and was using a bow string from a violin, just pulling it on, to make the metal plate resonate. Of course, a plate like that will resonate at different frequencies. The vibrations will go back and forth and hit a frequency which it maintains, like that. And you can see then the results. The sand would then form into these little bit of sand, white sand, would form into very distinct, patterns like that, yantras. And of course, the most famous yantra is the Shri yantra. Another one is the Shringa yantra, like that. So here's our wild speculation, which I know big scientists who say it's not all that wild. It's very interesting, that these patterns we're seeing are the patterns that when you pronounce, for example, if you pronounce the Bija mantra, Hring, that's the Bija mantra for Lakshmi. If you pronounce it properly, do you get this yantra? This is sand, or whatever it is, form into this pattern. Or if you pronounce the Nishunga yantra, Krong, 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 at 1,175 times per second, like that, do you get these yantras, so on. You begin to see maybe how fine the nervous systems for these brahmanas were and how these kshatriyas were terrified of them, because just by having these very fine births, very fine nervous systems, and also being in the Dwapara Yuga, they could manipulate sound in such a fashion. We're finishing off our wild speculation here. When water freezes, the ice, the hydrogen and oxygen molecules, they pack together to make a crystal. Now this happens when anything freezes. If you take iron and melt it, and introduce a little bit of chrome or molybdenum, or even just carbon, iron with a little carbon in it is steel. Steel is iron with a small amount of carbon. And what does it makes a little bit different crystal structure when it freezes, when it becomes solid like that, so on. So there are different packing structures that when the thing freezes. And the idea, this is where I mentioned this to a friend who's a very big physicist, And he was shocked. He said, "Wonderful, fantastic idea." That if you subject a freezing alloy, metal alloy, to a standing wave, like we had in our previous demonstrations, will that influence the packing structure? And he was saying it's a whole area of investigation, and most likely it's probably a fact that you could get the metal to go into an unstable packing structure. That, for example, you can make a certain kind of alloy of metal, and all you had to do was hit it with a hammer, and it would then fall down to a more stable packing structure, and while doing that, would release a tremendous flash of energy. So this is a kind of some ideas, just how we can look at this this art of throwing mantras and all these kind of things is not just being fairy tales. It actually has very practical relationship with the modern science and developing these things. And of course, the next question is, we go ahead here. Oh, here's a picture here. Okay. Finally, it may be argued why Dronacharya, who was a strict Brahmana, was engaged in teaching the military science. Okay. Because Prabhupada says he's just concerned that behind everything is Krishna. But he said different people have these different inclinations, nature, abilities, so they should use them for Krishna. So a Brahmana should always be a teacher. He can teach Ayurveda, he can teach Vastu Veda, Dhanur Veda, Danda Veda, which is political science. So we have medicine, weapons science, political science, Yantra Vidhi, which is how to make machines, Atmatattva, okay, and Gandharva Veda. Of course, Gandharva Veda is music, dance, and that's basically what our yoga is. Our yoga is Gandharva Veda, how to realize Krishna by singing, dancing, music. And it's still very active. You know, I had the fortune to be able to go through Manipur a lot because of Bhakti Sudhamana Maharaj, my sannyas guru. And in Manipur, they still develop this to such a high degree, this whole thing of Ras Lila, the performances. The children, that they're born into, you can see that they're born into these families. These are not ordinary kids. They're born into these families of dancers. They start developing the skills and everything else from like 4 years old. Here's little Krishna and little Radha. You know, these may be like five-year-old kids. And they're already learning all these subtleties of the meter, the accent, but all for higher purpose, for devotional purposes. Here's a picture of one of the big Ras Leelas with 108 gopis with very incredible, you know, rhythm and dancing and drum beats, all this thing. Yeah. And this is, of course, all for Sri Sri Radha Govinda Chandra, who are a beautiful self-manifesting deity. You know, Govinda Chandra is a whole history of how he manifested himself. Incredible. And so he's there, right, with the devotees, and they're chanting, singing, using proper talas, rhythms, mantras, everything to produce these different devotional sentiments. Yeah. But also then they can be used to manipulate matter at some point. Nah. Okay. So maybe we can't become teachers so much, but we can also become servants of the teacher. One of my favorite pictures. Here's Rupa Goswami writing the books. Srila Prabhupada writing the books, the teacher. And up here is the messenger ready to deliver them to the publisher or take them out on Sankirtan to distribute the books to the people. Like that. So our basic principle then of being like this is that wherever you go, whoever you meet, you know, we can distribute Prabhupada's books, and so we also can take up this brahminical activity, even though we're not competent to throw the mantras and the astras so much like that. Yeah. And then, you know, it's wherever we go, even though we're quite innocent and small, whatever we've learned from our spiritual master, wherever we are, maybe we're just people like, you know, again, like some lady with their children, but she goes to the market, she meets people here and there, and so she can be a very effective preacher, just wherever you go, whoever you meet, based upon Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, you understand some stories, and you just tell them, So there's no limit. You know, myself, I'm not really all that great at street sankirtan, but I can maybe do some classes, or when I'm traveling so much and I meet people while I'm traveling. Yeah? And so also I can distribute books and stuff like that, so on, and get the mantras out. So that's our whole presentation. Thank you very much. So Prabhupada ki jai.
Fantastic.
So any questions, comments?
I've just unmuted everybody. Now I have several questions, but I am going to wait and see if anyone else would like to make comments. Be sure to mute yourself if you don't have a question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hello,
Hare Krishna, who is this?
My name is Kandita Devi Dasi. I live on the Big Island.
Oh goodness, okay.
My question is how can some of these things are difficult to preach, like in today's modern age, you know, about women being no better than boys, and you know, so there's some other quotes that Srila Prabhupada has given us. You know, in this modern day, you know, people don't accept that. And, you know, it's important to get out the philosophy. The main thing is, you know, we're not these bodies, we're spirit souls, and servants of Krishna. But eventually, these people are going to come across these comments. And I just want to know, it's difficult to preach, so how do we do that?
It's also difficult to, for example, one time I was up in Vancouver. And it was Rath Yatra, and they had this questions and answers place. It was you know, separated a little bit from the main area because, you know, the noise of the stage performances, you know. And so different people were over there sometime, and they said, okay, Sannyasi, you should go over and do the questions and answers thing, you know. So I went over there, and maybe about 20 people, you know. And they left me all by myself, and then there was one older lady devotee. She had like a visor on, and she had her neck beads. And whenever there was a kind of a lull, she thought she would do me a great service, you know. She'd come up with all these questions, you know. Women are less intelligent. We never went to the moon. And what is it? And homosexuals are all crazy. and I was all alone there. And there was somebody from NASA with his family in the audience. There was one lesbian girl and a gay guy there. And what else was it? It was just like, of course, a lot of women. You know, so it was, oh God, it was one of the most ridiculous experiences of my whole life. And I kept looking over just to try and catch somebody's attention from the main area like that. But this Krishna just left me there for about, and I think everybody was looking at me and saying, oh, Mars is doing okay. He's got a big audience like that. So when she got to this thing of, I think she said queers are crazy. That's, you know, she was this blunt lady like that, you know. Well, you know, yeah. It was incredible. It was like, anyway, when she got to that point, in the end, this lesbian girl was kind of so upset. She got out of the chairs, and she was back behind the audience area there, like kind of crying and howling and stuff, you know. But in the end, she sat back down again. It was just incredible. If it comes up like this, what do you do? I mean, you avoid it, and if you can't handle it, which I do sometimes. Other than that, the best thing is if you know what Prabhupada says, and you see how Prabhupada uses what he says in different circumstances, you know, then that's the thing. If we know, hear the stories, hear Prabhupada, then we know, okay, Prabhupada talks about it this way. And Prabhupada's Prabhupada. He says, I'm not, people think I'm like an 80-year-old Hindu man, you know, and so they expect me to have a certain kind of like, what's the word, like, you know, tough kind of opinion about this stuff, yeah. And somebody else will present it in a different way, you know? So for some person, for the NASA guys, they probably also may have thought that all homosexuals are crazy, you know. But they may have, on the other hand, they may have thought that yeah, we did go to the moon. So there are different controversial topics for different people, like that. And depending on the kind of people we meet, we develop the experience that we, you know, we can. So I've developed pretty much this pretty good rapport in terms of science. It's, I think from the very beginning, it's what I'm trying to write on now, I'm trying to write on it. But I don't do it like a hard scientist, like something's happening outside there. I don't do it like Sadaputo or people like that or others who were, you know, very much trained in the specific areas. Because you can't do it. You have to know the culture and stuff like that. You know, I can talk to ladies like a sannyasi, you know, but basically as soon as possible I put them in contact with, you know, a proper lady who knows the culture and the philosophy. And then they can explain it in such a way that a lady can understand. Or somebody else can explain it in such a way a scientist can explain it to a scientist, you know, who speaks the language. Or children can explain it to children, you know, and such as that. So I would say one way is to have a general knowledge about everything, and so we can explain it a little bit. And the second thing is that to know the resources and where to send people if they want more detailed, hard explanations, and to develop specific knowledge about a certain area, which is our preaching field, where we're supposed to deal with it in more detail. And finally, to appreciate that some people don't want to. You know, they're looking for a reason, you know, to disagree. They're looking for some point. And so even though it is reasonable and stuff like that, they're looking for some reason to avoid the thing, and then we just avoid them. We can't deal with them. We try and quote from the scriptures. That doesn't work, okay. And we avoid them and let them go on with their pathway like that. So that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I'd like to make a comment, please.
Oh, yeah, who's this?
This is Raghava Pandit Das. Please accept my obeisances, Maharaj.
I accept mine. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. You made a point about you told a little bit about that Halatni plate with those yantras.
Yes.
Halatni plate. Yeah, that was what it's called. Yeah. A little while ago, I came across a video of that on the YouTube. It's pretty amazing. This guy, he's adding, he's increasing the resonance, and then all these various yantras appear.
Yeah, I've been to museums, big museums, where they have like, you know, 20 foot by 20 foot square sand things, and they have maybe like a different series of combinations of speakers, maybe four different people at the same time can be manipulating them. And so it's really incredible. The little kids and stuff sit there playing each of their own control panel, and because each one is controlling different speakers, you get these incredible, you know, things happening in the sand like that. It's unbelievable. You know, patterns and stuff developing. And also the symmetry of them. Now, we're talking about playing tones. But when you start putting in like, you know, things like that, oh my gosh, you know. So anyway, it's a, Prabhupada said these things will be the basis of great discoveries in science. And they don't require so much money as can other things too. Even medical surgery, so many things. So Prabhupada is creating an entire revolution.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. I didn't look at it. I'll make a note of it. Look on YouTube. What did you? I guess it would for sand. Sand would be sand. Sand patterns would probably do it.
Yeah. Maharaj, do you see the chat? Mother Anu asking a question.
I got Raghu Pandit. I guess I got to go back up.
Well, I can read it to you.
Let me know about the importance of yantra power and how it is done for one protection, how to protect oneself.
Yeah, and she's got some other stuff before that. Yantra will give the right solution for material desires. Most people depend on yantra. Let me know about the importance of the power of yantra to protect oneself.
Yeah. I think that because they're different, they're devotional yantras, they're yantras, there are hymns in the Vedas, and the yantra, because what we do in our tantra, in our Vaishnava tantra, the yantra we use is the form of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, you know, and so that's the form we're using to focus our mantra on that yantra, You know? And the other forms were because people, like, you know, they have to chant Om. They're afraid of personalities, so you get impersonal yantras, Om, Krim, Kraum. And so in our deity worship, as far as I know, Panchangri and Johnny Vas in their workshops are explaining that Bhakti Siddhanta eliminated a lot of the mudras, you know, and yantras and so on from the Hari Bhakti Vilas explanation. I've directly read where Prabhupada says that the Hari Bhakti Vilas is unnecessarily ritualistic. But he says it was, at that time, everybody was practically speaking smart to Brahmins. So Sanatana Goswami had to go with the flow. It's very interesting. It's just written by Sanatana Goswami, but because we have the Parampara explanation, we understand that it's just not necessary. And we wear Kunti Mala, we put on Tilak, and that's sufficient kavacha to protect us. You know, putting on Tilak and wearing the Kunti Mala, and Prabhupada is strict about that. So if we wear those two, and we have sufficient shield, kavacha, to protect us from the evil eye, and even different influences, you know. Then beyond that, we depend upon mantra and Krishna, and his form, you know, and that will do everything else. Of course, as we become more expert in everything else, yeah, we can do all these things, seeing them all as different forms of Krishna and expansions of Krishna, and it becomes very wholesome then. And we can, you know, do specific results that now we don't have these things, so we have to deal with, you know, surgery and these kind of things. We have to use them because we haven't got to develop mantras and so on in Ayurveda to take care of these problems like that. Yeah. That's my understanding. Yeah.
Anyone else have a question?
Hare Krishna, I have a really quick comment and a really quick question. Dandavats Maharaj, that was a very enlivening, interesting class. I just wanted to tell you, we were listening, you made this comment, everything is under the supreme control of Kala. And we all know that Kala is the Sanskrit word for time.
Yeah.
But what you might find interesting is that Kala is the Hawaiian word for money.
Time is money.
So if you know, someone who speaks Hawaiian heard you say that, they'd get a different idea of what you're saying.
But it's almost the same, I think.
Yeah. And then my quick question is what you were just saying about tilak. I don't put on clay tilak every day, but I was wondering if you have an opinion of water tilak.
I think Prabhupada's kind of saying it like it works. He tells that story about this Muslim guy who took over a factory, right? And he said anybody who wears tilak, you know, there'll be fires. So only one guy wore it. He was the owner came right to him, was staring at him, and he stared right back at him, and he laughed, and he said, okay, this one man, one brave man can wear a tilak, but nobody else, you know. So, and also with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, he told them to have hair, he told them to wear suits, he told them to sit on chairs, and he told them he had to wear a tilak. You know? It's very interesting. So, and even some scientists, I know, big Indian people, they, some of them very strict, like Sri Vaishnavas and stuff, they wear tilak and so on. So it's interesting. It's even in very old icons, when friends showed me these very old Christian icons, you see these marks on the foreheads and stuff like that and so on. They apparently were even common throughout that area for indicating groups and stuff like that. You know? So I think it has its potency, you know. But I think it has more potency if we wear it, you know, and stuff like that. And of course, if it looks nice, you know, then that's something else. And people figure, well, okay, it's different, but it looks nice, you know, like that. What wonder? Then of course, it automatically stimulates so many questions like that. And actually, it creates auspiciousness in the mind of the people around us, and even maybe save somebody's life to see somebody wearing tilak, you know. Like that, yeah. And the neck beads. One devotee, Vichitatma, he would sell neck beads as part of this book distribution, as far as I understand, and people were attracted to the beads and they buy them. And it was so polarizing. Some people, they would see the neck beads and they'd say, what's that? How much are they? They would just be attracted. Other people, they would become terrified or angry and stuff and wouldn't want to touch them and everything else, you know. So there's very deep archetypal significance in this, these things. You know? But I think it has potency, but I think the Tilakana is better. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. I often wear Rudraksha beads to the university, and I get tons, like 10 or more comments on them. And I stop and talk to people because they just stop me and comment on my Rudraksha beads.
And another thing to get people to stop and talk to you is an accordion. I was traveling. I used to travel as accordion, sometimes experimenting. It's amazing how many people will come up. The first place to figure, you've got to be crazy if you've got an accordion. So if you dress like a Hare Krishna or anything else, it's just immediately, okay, you guys are carrying an accordion, you've got to be nuts, you know. But then they come right up. It's okay, this guy's a little eccentric, and they'll talk to you and this and stuff. It's interesting how to get the message out. You put a tilak on with an accordion, well, sorry. Talk all day. The next thing is start doing palmistry. Oh God! And you have like, you know, everybody in the airport coming over, and you know, want their hand read next. So that's all works. It has its effect in society. The yantras and the mantras. You know, I agree. Somebody just commented too that some people think we're from the devil. It says that people have this 666 in their forehead. But it also says that our people will have their mark on their head. It's right in there. It says that Weber talks about the mark of the devil on the forehead. It also writes there, it says that our people have their mark. So if you want to deal with it on that level, quote the Bible, then where's your mark on your forehead if you're a Christian? Like that. But it's time, place, circumstance. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Oh,
yeah. You were talking earlier about measurements of time.
Uh-huh.
I remember hearing many, many years ago that when we say something like one moment, I remember hearing that a moment is actually calculated to be 1/11th of a second. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, probably one moment. Let me see here. Let's pop the slides down here. Okay.
That's Lava Matra.
Maybe not state.
It's 11th
yeah,
of a
Lava
second.
Yeah, Lava Matra. Yeah.
Lava Matra, okay. Saro Sangha Sarva Siddhi Hoy.
So, I don't know where it is here. Maybe that's, yeah, it is. There it is. 8/45. Lava Matra is. Yeah, 8/45 of a second, which of course works out to be 1/11, just about. I think some places a little bit different calculations, a little bit, but here is that's what it is. You know, 11 matra, 1/11. Yeah. Okay, because we're scientists, we'll open up our calculator, and we'll do 45 divided by 11 by 8 equals. Okay. 5 seconds? I got it wrong here. No, that's not right. It's, that is right. 5 times 8. Yeah, I don't know what that's. And then 11 matra is 8/45 of a second, which is 1/11th of a second. I guess something like that. That's what I heard, yeah. It's like about not that much. 8/45 of a second.
As a little anecdote about the terminology in English for time is when they were first, at least in modern times, calculating time with these sun clocks, they sort of came up with an hour, which seemed like a reasonable division. And then when they got the more sophisticated, then they had a minute division, which became the word minute.
Uh-huh.
Where minute came from was from minute. Oh. And then, and when they got even more sophisticated, they decided to do it for a second time, and that's where the word second came from.
Ah! Wow, okay. My goodness. Devotees learn everything.
And I think if you remember that at the time of death, it's not going to help you a bit. So anyway.
Well, that may make you remember that time is actually the external representation of Krishna.
There you go. Then got to tie it in.
Yeah. And Krishna is so fine. The Krishna's curly hair is so fine hanging over his beautiful forehead like that. So you have any other questions here, comments?
Anyone else? I had three quickies.
Okay.
I thought it was a great class. There was something you mentioned from, I think it was 1927, that's what I wrote back, wrote here, but it was about how women are more powerful because they inspire men. I just read an article that was posted, and it was from the New York Times. There was some research recently done on the power that women have in men's lives. And they took a lot of the big, especially rich, famous people in modern times and showed how as soon as they have any kind of women in their lives, whether it's the mother, a daughter, wife, or a sister, it really changes their entire outlook. They give examples of all kinds of people. One was Bill Gates. His wife was telling me she gives in charity, but he wasn't planning on doing it until the end of his life. But as soon as they had a baby girl, he immediately started giving billions of dollars away in charity. And they gave examples about that. It's interesting how women affect men's lives. I had two questions for you, just real simple ones, not very important, but just wondering. The chuti, the smallest unit of time, which you calculated about 1/1700th of a second, is that what Lord Brahma took the cows and calves, the calves and the boys away? Was it for a chuti?
I don't know. That's interesting, because you can just look up, it probably says he took them away for one moment. So in the Sanskrit, you know, in the 10th canto, that it may actually say, but he took them away for one moment of his time like that, maybe what it is. But of course, his time scale is so fantastic. He just like kind of like this, like you're playing with a little baby or something, you just take something away for a moment, just kind of like, you know, to relate to him. So he wasn't trying to create any big disturbance. He just, from his point of view, just kind of took the cowherd of boys away, just one moment to see how Krishna would react. But from his time standard, it was an entire year. For our time standard.
The other question I had is also that I thought it was fantastic that the discussion, the point you brought out about how the yantras are manifested, even you can see it, you know, as soon as there's like sand and you put different vibrations, it makes different yantras. So it was interesting how you were saying that the brahmanas, they had to be so finely attuned that they could produce sound vibrations and it would affect matter.
And also the thing is too, is that even, you know, they could, maybe they weren't working alone. It had to be like several brahmanas all chanting together, maybe like, you know, 400.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you get like six devotees on some headphones, all chanting some mantra like, you know, Om Kraum, Om Kraum, Om Kraum, Om Kraum, Om Kraum. Even if somebody, there's this whole thing in theater called ensemble learning. And actually you become a part of the ensemble. You don't really know how the ensemble does it, but you kind of do your part. And then the whole thing starts to take a certain form and stuff like that, the mantra, and you can take a breath, and it doesn't matter because five more people are chanting while you're breathing. So there you can start producing. And the thing is that the patterns can also be reproduced on oscilloscopes. The same patterns. You haven't got to use sand. Now you can use these graphic demonstrations, presenting them like that. So it's a whole area. It's just a whole incredible, incredible area. And it's not so expensive. You know, I haven't got to have big bevatrons and cyclotrons, you know. And again, it could be used, it's the whole point. If devotees do it, they can use it to do good things, you know. Turn all the U-238 in the world into lead. Neutralize all the atomic weapons, so there's no more atomic weapons. Yeah. How nice. Thank you, Krishna.
So My question was about Kshatriyas being trained by the Brahmanas in the military science. The Kshatriyas would not only just rely on their physical prowess and their skill at weapons, but they would learn how to chant the mantras from the Brahmanas, and that would produce the celestial weapons?
Yeah, because see, the thing is that even if you do this, I mean, maybe some experience with the Gayatri, if you really, you know, sit down and everything else, you can start getting very strong, you know, strong action inside your body, your mind, prana, like that, you know, standing so your body's halfway in cold water and it forces the prana to come up. So in the subtle level, just the level of prana and things like that, these kung fu people know all this, that different sounds have different kinds of effects with your physical apparatus. But beyond that, the idea is that these things that are connected to certain, you know, certain people, like a minor bird, mina bird, these birds like that. If you teach it to say mommy, like that, right? And one devotee said he walked into some temple and there was a minor bird in the lobby. He didn't know it like that, you know. And I think bird was saying something like mommy, and he was like looking around like that. It was like some child was. It's dark, you know, and it's funny, you saw the bird up there, and you say, oh my God, you know. So same way, these mantras and prayers and stuff, they stimulate certain different devatas and gandharvas and people like that to respond. So, my gosh. So I would say that it not only is this what deals with the physical apparatus of the universe, but also then it deals with the personalities involved, and they react, you know, by causing the effects. So the Kshatriyas, they learned to do this to some degree in terms of their work.
I was just going to say, when I was studying the martial arts, my karate teacher, who learned most of his style from an Okinawan master, he said that.
What's the name of your school? What was the name of the school?
Well, I studied many, well, it was in Detroit, anyway. I'm sorry, it's been so long since I've studied the martial arts, I've kind of forgotten what his particular style was. But,
no, because my style was from Okinawa, also was Awichiru.
Well, ours was Ishinru.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, but they go back to these subtle powers.
But he was saying that his master was teaching them how to say different types of ki, sound vibrations, in order to protect different parts of their body. So if they were being hit, the master would be able to say a certain sound vibration and protect that particular part of the body when there was impact. So that was
even in theater they do this too. You know, it's tremendous training. But you can see that a very low sound stimulates the lower part of the body, and you just go increasing the pitch. You can just feel it coming up right up to your stomach, your chest, your throat, your nose, like that. So this pitch alone relates to different parts of the body and stuff like that. You know? Like, you know, certain very sensuous, lascivious music has very heavy, gross, low notes, rhythmic notes that, you know, really stimulate, you know, sexual agitation, like that. You know? Yeah.
So. This is Jay. I thought once that it would be a non-polluting way of making cars go with mantra.
Well, yeah, or flower airplanes. Wow, but you have the people that can do this. Everything else like that. There's so many descriptions of these things, but they require people of more subtle, higher character to do them. And Prabhupada's saying, turning that, you know, our children's children, if we all are strict, heard that Prabhupada's Janivas said that Prabhupada said that if you strictly follow everything I'm giving you, and your children strictly follow, then your grandchildren will be traveling on flying carpets. So very quickly you can purify the nervous systems and everything else like that. Experience these subtle energies and then just take advantage of them like that. But I guess we should go now. It's already like, you know, 5 minutes to 1 o'clock here, and we gotta get ready for our other program. Tonight we have Isopanishad online, like that, so on. Doing here like that. So, thank you very much. For us, it's a really great opportunity to talk about Krishna. There's such a nice audience like that, too.
Thank Hare you very Krishna. Much. Very nice.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you
very much. Hare Krishna.